This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell upon the earth, and certainly it's important for all people. Because the principles we believe in, the principle of preserving our heritage, our freedom, our traditions, our faith, our way of life, the very way that we look and feel about the world, all these things that we want for our own people, we certainly understand and agree that they're good for all people of the world. The Japanese should be able to preserve their heritage. The Chinese, the Arab people, certainly. The African people. For that matter, we can talk about the Australian Aborigines, or we can talk about the people of India or the people of Nepal, or we can talk about the American Indian. Every race, every heritage should be allowed to preserve its heritage. But, ladies and gentlemen, the race, the heritage, which has done so much in the world that truly has transformed our world into what we call the modern world and modern civilization, and modern, quote, democratic principles, or the idea of people having freedom and some degree of freedom in terms of how they run their own lives and make their own choices in their lives for education, or choices in their lives for voting and leadership, or where they live or what they do in their world. This Western civilization, which much of the world has copied in terms of a format, unfortunately they've copied some of the worst aspects of it. The people who formed this culture are now in a great tragedy, an unfolding tragedy. And I am now back in Eastern Europe. In fact, I'm attending and speaking at an international conference, basically talking and concerned with the preservation and the heritage, the survival of the white world. That is, the part of this world that is European and European-American, and the part of the world and the heritage of the world that is now under an incredible assault. We are losing it all, ladies and gentlemen. We are losing it all. Let me make a few offhand comments about this. And in fact, I'm working on some remarks for the conference. I'm going to give you some of my working remarks. These are not final. They've not been edited yet. But I'm just going to share with you a few lines of some of the things that I will be talking about on this upcoming conference. And at the conference, by the way, we have people from all over the Western world, myself from the United States. We have people from Russia, France, Germany, Austria, Belgium, Spain, Italy, a number of other countries, Greece, Ukraine. It's really a conference that's going to be a fantastic people. Bulgaria, Belgium. So I'll give you some good reports on that, and I hope I can broadcast some of that to you live. I think that would be very good if we could do that. Well, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you some of those remarks. Let me share some of those with you. This is a work in progress. This is not my final remarks by any means, but these are a section of some of the things that I will be talking about at the conference. Our people are at the edge of the precipice. We have scaled the highest mountains, plumbed the depths of the oceans, crossed great voids of space. We've unlocked the secrets of the genome. Our medicine has saved hundreds of millions of people from the capricious perils of nature and disease. We've carved sculpture and brushed paintings as beautiful as any scene found in the natural world. We've written words that evoke the deepest of emotions, the greatest inspiration. Our technology has created a new world. We have even left our footprints on that silvery orb that shines on us when the sun has turned its back upon us and only the dark mists of infinite space fills the horizon. Yet, simultaneous of this incredible explosion of achievement, we have seen our people driven to the brink of non-existence. We have seen them driven to fratricide and 100 years of intermittent war turned into terrifying proportions by the technology now controlled in many ways politically, by the hands of ancient foes who were once merely a thorn in our feet and now growing tumors in both heart and brain. Today, every European nation and people has a crisis not only of identity, but even of existence. Our birth rates are averaging about 1.24. Translated, it means that we're liquidating more than 40% of our population each generation. It's the greatest worldwide genocide in our people's history, even exceeding the plagues and invasions of the Middle Ages. Even the Black Plague worked its way through one generation or so and subsided, while this new disaster, this genocidal disaster, has worked its destructive activities through one generation now and only gains momentum for more to come. Make no mistake about it, it is genocide. The destruction of the genotype, destruction of the unique genes, unique societies that have existed for thousands of years and make us what we are. It's not just a reduction of numbers. For in every European nation, great waves of non-European immigration conquers our mores, our faiths, our politics. In Europe, the East now has penetrated with its agents in every capital, making once serene and secure streets and neighborhoods and subways places today of pregnant fear and of aborted freedom. In America, legal and illegal immigration, differential birth rates, and European-American sterility have transformed an overwhelming 90% European-American majority with an almost 100% Western mindset into a nation today where the 200-year overwhelming American European majority will become a minority in but a generation. Such demographic change is so terrifyingly fast, but it is but a blink of an eye of historical time, only a single second in our entire historical hour, but a second that can end a race as surely as a second can still the heart of a living man. It is not just our aging population that's dying. It is us. Our history is dying, our present, our future, our dreams and our hopes. And all the dreams and hopes and sacrifices and blood and sweat and toil and hardship of all those who came before us, all those who sacrificed to give us material well-being today, to give us freedom, and to give us life. And now the most elemental, precious possession of all, life. Life for our expression of life on this earth is seriously in question. For we are a form of life on this planet no less distinct than the different breeds of fish or dolphins or whales. Our expression of life is our very existence. Our expression of life is being eradicated and erased from the earth. But as Shakespeare once said, we shall not go quietly into the night. There is a stirring among our people. It's a stirring that comes from deep in our hearts and even deep in that spiral of the DNA that animates all of us and makes us as we are. and ultimately in spite of the overwhelming propaganda, the deracination we see among us, the control of our political processes and our media processes, there's something inside so many millions of our people that begs to be expressed, that begs to come out, that begs for victory. And as I travel the world, as I travel the United States and Canada, North America, South America, Europe, and other parts of the world, I see this awakening taking place. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, our people are at the edge of the precipice, but they're also close to a journey to the farthest star. For we today are beginning to awaken, and we today, once awakened, once we use the genius and the courage that we see so often in our people all over the world, once we harness that intelligence and that courage and apply it to the question of our survival, I can tell you that our survival will become absolutely inevitable. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's a few notes from my speech. It's still a work in progress, so don't hold me to it. But the speech is much longer, of course. I've been traveling, as you can tell. I'm just about ready to lose my voice, and it's a long, long trip from Mandeville, Louisiana, over to this part of the world. Incredible trip. So I've been traveling about a day plus a 9-hour time change, and I'm going to go take a nap right now, try to refresh. I've still got to do some writing and still got to do some preparation for some academic work. And I also have to get some sleep. But I'm so glad that I had this opportunity to share with you today, share with you once more the things that animate my own heart, the things that make, you know, my blood run faster and warmer. And there's nothing to me, there's no more satisfying thing I can do in my life than stand up and work for the preservation of our people and the highest ideals of our people, the highest principles that our people represent. We're not just fighting for our survival, though our survival is in question, and our survival is our first task. The preservation of our people is the first task. You know, these people often call us supremacists. We're not. We're not trying to be supreme over other people. It's the neocons. It's the Jewish supremacists who are the internationalists. It is the leftists who are the globalists. We believe every people has a right to run its own affairs and its own countries and do what they want in their own lands, as long as they don't come trying to force themselves onto us, or, for that matter, subvert us. We have no problem with them. We have a right and we have a duty not to tell people, not to tell people we're going to make you responsible for our borders. It's not Fox of Mexico that's responsible for our Mexican invasion, even though he's aiding and abetting it. It is we who are responsible because we have not done what we must do to protect our borders. And by the way, for my listeners who exist and who follow my work around the world and who understand the very vital aspect of the Jewish supremacist problem, please understand that when I talk about defending European heritage, this is not the racist image that the Jewish supremacists have created of David Duke or of this movement. That's not what it's about. You know, we don't hate other people. We're not trying to suppress other people. Our entire motive here is simply the preservation of our own people, our own heritage, our own freedom, our own values, and our own lands. And we have a right to do that. And I believe you have a right to do that. American troops shouldn't be in Iraq. They shouldn't be in the Middle East. We shouldn't have 60 bases around the world. I don't believe that we should. At the same token, we have a right to maintain our own country here at home. In fact, a much better place for the troops in Iraq would be along the Mexican-American border, because that's where our real danger rests. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm working as hard as I can. I need your support to continue this work. Every day of my life is about this. I hope all of you listening at least make part of your day, at least some moments are spent advancing this cause supporting this cause, contributing to this cause, spreading this cause around the world. You have the internet in front of you that can do that, and I hope that all of you will take the opportunity given you. We have a as Don Black says so often, we have a great gift in the internet. Our people, starting with Dr. Shockley, who invented the transistor, the silicon chip, which forms the whole basis of the modern computer industry. You know, our people created this incredible device, this incredible machine, if you will, that enables us to communicate independently all over the world instantaneously. We have the opportunity now to spread the truth. We just have to make sure the truth is in a good and intelligent format, you know, that we kick the facts out there. That's what's so powerful about Jewish supremacism and why this book continues to sell and go into more languages almost every day and sell more copies around the world. It seems to build momentum instead of slacking as most books do, because it's quoting the Jewish supremacists, the Jewish extremists themselves. It's almost impossible to refute this book. And once people see the elements of Jewish supremacism that exist in the American government and the American media, for instance, their role in organized crime, whereas everyone has been taught about how Italians are associated with organized crime, very few people even know that there's a Jewish connection to organized crime that certainly far exceeds any sort of Italian connection to it. And if you look at the criminal behaviors of this tiny Jewish population around the world, it far exceeds anything the Italians could ever think about. And why should we associate Italians anyway with organized crime? I'd rather associate Italians with Leonardo and Michelangelo and Botticelli and so many other, you know, fantastic men of history. Caesar, for that matter, and the Roman Caesars, the Roman Senate, the foundation of law and government that we really used in so many ways to create and to model our own in the United States of America and elsewhere around the European world, and the science and technology that the Romans brought to the ancient world. So, you know, why do we associate Italians? Why do we hear Italian music and we think of The Godfather? We think of gangsters. Why do we, even almost Italian restaurants, Italian food, and immediately the association of gangsters come up? And of course, that goes right back to who controls the media. Who really does control Hollywood? And there's no argument about who dominates Hollywood in terms of influence. It's overwhelmingly Jewish. It looks like, you know, a bar mitzvah. And you know it, I know it, the world knows it. And I've got Jewish magazines that I quote from and Jewish supremacism talking about, boasting about the fact how most of the media conglomerates are controlled by Zionists, basically radical Jews. And how the last one is not, and that's the Murdoch Corporation, and there's some question whether he's a Jew or not, and, you know, I'm not going to say a person is Jewish unless I have some pretty strong evidence to that effect. There's been some different rumors about Murdoch. But it does point out that Murdoch has Jews in many, many powerful positions in his entire empire. They pretty much control all the news that he dishes out, his empire, and that he is more pro-Israel, or as pro-Israel as any radical extremist Jew. Which also makes me suspect somewhat his own family lineage. What it seems to be a stronger tie there than simply an ideology or simply the idea of advancing his business. Because you know you don't advance your business in that level of media in this country today if you are suspected of not supporting Jewish supremacism to the hilt. We had the individual, of course, you can remember when Ted Turner tried to buy CBS and he had a long history of broadcasting, and they wanted to keep this in the family. They wanted to keep this in the same, you know, Jewish milieu, and they blocked his maneuver, and they brought in, and in fact, they complained about Ted Turner saying he wasn't really, he didn't have the knowledge to own this television network. He couldn't do it as professional. He didn't have any background in that. He just was an advertising guy and owned one CNN network, only the biggest news network at the time in the world. So they nixed his bid to control CBS. And by the way, he himself has played the game. He's had promoted many, many Jewish extremists to very top roles in CNN. He doesn't control CNN, I think, anymore. But look at CNN today, like the Wolf Blitzer program. Here's a guy that used to work for AIPAC, which is one of the most extreme Jewish lobbyist organizations in the United States, who support the most radical Jewish policies in Israel. But in CBS, in that takeover a few years ago, they decided to appoint Lawrence Tisch, a Jewish guy, not appoint him, but allow him to take over the network, And this guy was a magnate, of course, but he had his money from the hotel business. He had no experience in journalism. You know, so it wasn't really about a person's experience. It was about their lineage. It was about the positions that they would take in the world. And, of course, we saw a media that absolutely, it was almost a conspiracy to distort the whole picture of Iraq before the Iraq War and to drive America to war. And it's not just the news networks. They did it very much, but so did the New York Times and so many other organizations out there, and so many other Jewish factors were at work. They orchestrated it with Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz. They orchestrated it with the propaganda, the lies of weapons of mass destruction, and that was orchestrated by Stuart Cohen in the CIA, who was in charge of the so-called intelligence from the region. It was orchestrated in so many aspects of our administration and the Jewish influence in the administration. So ladies and gentlemen, we have a situation where we literally are struggling for our lives, our existence. And as I often say, even a worm, even a cockroach, is the most lowly of animal life will struggle for its existence, for its survival. Even a plant will try to struggle from the floor of the forest up toward the sun. And this urge toward life is one of the most natural and one of the most basic urges of any living thing. And it's an urge that, in spite of all the propaganda, in spite of all the lies and, the deracination of our people, I believe that this elemental thing will come to the fore as people begin to see the writing on the wall. To me, that means conditions will become a lot worse before they become better. But eventually, there'll be a tremendous shift in consensus. And Europeans and Americans all over the world will begin to see the writing on the wall. And you'll begin to see a tremendous movement toward our positions and toward policies that will enable our people to survive. I'm dedicated to that change of consensus. I'm convinced that this change of consensus will happen in the lifetime of the people right now who are in middle age. There will certainly, that the people being born of our race right now, by the time they reach their stride in 19, when they're in their 30s, when they're at the peak of their powers and abilities, and I think they'll be right in the middle of the struggle. So the young people listening out there, you know, you're going to have a very exciting time in the future. It's going to be a terrible time, but it's also going to be a great and exciting time because you'll have the opportunity to be the generation that will literally restore our freedoms and preserve our heritage, not just for the present, but certainly and perhaps for all time. Well, thanks so much for being with me, and again, I look forward very much to being with you tomorrow. My traveling's over. I'll try to get some rest tonight, be a little fresher tomorrow, and please do your part in spreading this word all over the internet and all over the world. Thanks so much. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddude.com.